you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow out across on the SDR show? This week we have rock and roll coolness itself. Josh Todd, the lead singer of Buck Cherry, comes on the SDR show. We get into all things Buck Cherry and the long history they've had now, which is amazing how long they've been around. Really super cool dude and a really fun interview. Don't forget we do this show every single Wednesday, every single Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, live at Gas Digital. Then the interview you're hearing right now comes out 5 days later everywhere, which would be YouTube and Spotify, etc. Or just go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the code SDR, subscribe now. You get a 7-day free trial, 20% off, and access to every episode we've ever done in HD video, audio, commercial, free. But before we get into the show, if you like the SDR show and you want to have amazing sex, we want to tell you about a popular sexual enhancer, the Promescent Delay Spray, that's been used by over a million men and is clinically proven to help you last longer in bed. So it takes the edge off, it lowers the sensitivity, so you don't have to worry about finishing too soon. Just better sex guaranteed, no pesky subscription required, it's easy to use, it helps you last longer, and it gives you more confidence. What more could you ask for? So just go to Promescent.com, that's Promescent.com. There is not even a promo code, it don't matter. You have a 60-day money-back guarantee, you could feel confident, you can know you last longer. You want to have a little more excitement, look and feel more manly, you go to Promescent.com. That's what you should do, and do it now. But here it is right now, the Buck Cherry episode of the SDR.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's beat, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know.
It is the SDR show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, my most go-to co-host. It is James Madden. How are you, buddy?
Yo, baby, the backup quarterback is starting the game today, yeah. Baby. Let's go. Let's go. And I'm throwing T to E's.
All right. And Shannon, of course, is in our Gas Digital Studios. And now I know this dude indirectly, casually, not friends. I'm not going to ever say that about anybody, but because I don't have any friends. But I know this band forever. I will say how long I know this band. You ready for this? First of all, it is Josh Todd. The band we're talking about is Buck Cherry. But here we go. 1999, my ex-girlfriend, her name is Dawn, was friends with one of your former bandmates. We were at Don Hills, and we got a CDR of the first record before it came out, and I started playing it on my radio show back in 99, right? So that's how far back we go. I was there broadcasting live during Crew Fest. You guys came on my show, my old radio show, a bunch of times, and I hosted Shiprock with you guys. I even briefly played basketball with you guys on Shiprock, but I'm terrible, so I only played for 30 seconds. Josh Todd, thank you so much for coming. Oh, and also, had you on my show when your solo record came out and you performed live. How about all that?
Wow, that's a lot. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, we're coming up on 23 years in the game, Buck Cherry, and you know, I don't really think about it until I have to go promote a record. And then I'm like, wow, it's been a long time. I'm getting old, you know. but yeah, those are all really wonderful moments for us, you know.
Giving me the CDR was probably one of your favorite moments, if I'm not mistaken.
There you go. no, just, you know, that first record, the self-titled record, was everything was new. So it was a lot of fun.
Right. It really was a unique time. And I remember at the time hearing the band Buck Cherry, and there was a rumor at first that it was just supposed to be, fuck, I forget the term when the consonants are flipped. There's a term for that for Chuck Berry. But it was actually, originally, you guys were named after a drag queen you knew named Buck Cherry. Is that right?
Yeah, this drag queen used to come and bum cigarettes off of Keith, actually, you know. And then cut to, we were making the first record. We had to change our name. Our name was originally Sparrow. which is the Finch of the Songbirds, and we thought that was cool. And but it just it was a Christian rock label at the time, so we had some copyright issues, and so we had to change our name. And thank God, because it was not a great name. And Keith was reading a book about Chuck Berry's life, and in there he said record labels will make you do all kinds of things you don't want to do, like turn your name upside down, like Buck Cherry. And we're like, there it is again. And at that point, we were like, just the name game had become just a bunch of arguments at that point. We'd bring in like these lists, and some guy would like, one band member would like these names, and another band member, it was just a nightmare. So once we got to Buck Cherry, it was like, that's good. Let's go with that.
It's always funny when you hear like friends like the band Bon Jovi, right? Like, or the band Slaughter, or any of these bands that are named after someone. I always would have liked to be there during those meetings. It was like, all right, guys, hear me out. The Josh Todd Experience. Like, what? Shut the fuck up.
No, that would have not gone over well. I would have never even wanted that. You know, I wanted to be in a band and, you know, a gang and, you know, and make a huge catalog of music, and that'd be my mark in the game, you know, and that's what happened.
It's crazy to think. So Hellbound, which is getting phenomenal reviews, just came out recently. Ninth album in 20 something years, which, you know, sounds like maybe a little about right. But you also got to remember there was a good, what is it, about a 5-year break where you weren't putting out music. So when you factor that in, it's like every year and a half or so, really, an album came out, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, I don't know if it was 5 years, but I think it was like 3 years before 15. But
well, 2001 was Time Bomb, right? And 2006 was 15, so 5 years.
No, 2005 was 15, but
sorry about that.
Yeah, whatever. The bottom line is, we had our hiatus, and there's been a lot of peaks and valleys in the Buck Cherry story, you know, and here we are at Hellbound, you know, whenever we're like backs against the walls, like we were in 2020 with COVID and having all our whole tour removed from us and all kinds of uncertainty. That's when we make our best records. You know, Hellbound has definitely got to be one of the best Buck Cherry records. It's really special. And we had a lot of fun making it, and it was a labor of love. But we've been sitting on it since October of 2020.
Right, which is
so
crazy.
Like to finally have it hit the streets is really, really awesome.
And speaking of what's going on, which is just crazy, because not only I did read that you guys have been sitting on this album that you're so proud of, and justly so, for almost a half a year, over half a year at this point, like whatever it is, 10 months, you're holding on to it. I just read that you had to cancel some shows because two guys got fucking COVID.
Oh.
Yeah. We're all vaccinated, but Stevie and Francis came up with it. You know, Stevie never gets sick, and he just woke up one morning when we were just back on the road, and he's like, "Stay away from me. I feel really weird." And
sounds like every woman I've ever met. Continue.
Yeah, and then we just we almost didn't get him tested. You know, I started talking with my tour manager. We're setting up for a show that day. And I said, "Hey man, what were your symptoms?" And he goes, "Oh, I just had like these really bad aches. And, you know, I had like a headache." And I go, "You know, those are COVID symptoms. We should get you tested." And, you know, and Francis, we had just been home for 3 days. So we were, you know, Francis had been not feeling well for those 3 days. And so anyways, long story short, yeah, they came up positive. We shut it down, and now they're negative. It's been like, you know, they had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I had Moderna, and a couple other guys had, we all had different vaccines, you know, but I don't know if that was the reason why I didn't get it or what. I just think that as soon as we found out, we all like put on masks and got everything together to, you know, start the process.
Now, I know you had to cancel some shows, but now that they're negative, do you still have to wait quarantine-y time? Like another, is that a word? But, you know, like 2 weeks or like what's the...
Yeah, we're still waiting till we don't leave till the 29th, and then we're back on it.
And by the way, which is such a great lineup, there's a show coming up. I think it's in August, and it's called The Great American Truck Show, which it's you guys, Jelly Roll, who's been on the show, Puddle of Mud, Tommy Vexed. I was looking at the lineup. I'm like, holy fuck, do I want to go to that show? Jelly Roll, who's just one of the coolest dudes on the planet, is in that bill. That's just a great lineup. I'm excited that looks like that will happen, because that would have sucked for that not to be a part of this.
yeah, you know, one day at a time, let's hope that it does happen and all the bands make it to that one, you know, because it is a weird time right now. A lot of people are, this variant is really starting to rear its ugly head. So yeah, I pray that that's, you know, we were really kind of safe. And now we're like, okay, where can we tighten up our game? Cause we don't want this to ever happen again, you know?
Right.
If we were thinking like maybe on the meet and greets, we got to start, you know, tightening up our game there a little bit, you know, because you meet a lot of people every day and that's where you got to be careful.
Sorry, I never even thought about that. James, I could tell you have a question.
Well, yeah, man, I think you got to, first of all, I think Moderna is the alpha when it comes to this
Let's
Delta
go.
Shit.
Let's go.
Yeah. So I'm out there licking doorknobs and shit, Josh. I'm like, my arm, I still can't get all the way up, but who cares? Also, yeah. This would be kind
Moderna,
of fun.
Baby.
There it is, dog. Moderna for life. We can get gang tattoos right here. That's what it is now. Ain't no Bloods or Crips. Maybe for meet and greets, maybe you dress up a little. So you do your stage thing, you know, and then after you dress up like the villains in E.T. or Devo, whoever you like better, and you just wear them body suits. Who wouldn't like that?
Yeah.
To take pictures and to just see you through the little thing? Fuck yeah, man.
Yeah, I think we're just going to do mass. We're going to do mass, and then we're going to do a group photo at the end where we hold our breath.
No, you know what you should do? I've seen this, Josh. They make masks where it's your face, the lower part of your face imprinted on the mask.
Yeah.
So just wear those. That's all problem solved.
Well, you have a constant grin. You're like, hi, how are you?
You look like a psychopath for an
That's
hour.
So great.
Why not? Yeah. I'm sure that you couldn't. I don't know the legalities of it, but vaccine only for meet and greet? That I'm sure you couldn't do that. I don't know how that works. I don't
you just never, what are we going to start, checking car? Nobody's ever going to be truthful. And
right.
And we don't want to get into that whole thing, you know, just like masks. And, you know, I mean, listen, I was an essential worker for 4 months during COVID as well. Like
I read you got a phlebotomist. You're a phlebotomist, right? Is that my
saying
that right?
Yeah, I'm a phlebotomist. So I learned a lot about COVID.
I'm messing up all day.
I had a lot of COVID in my hands. I also did a lot of lab testing. And so as long as you wash your hands and you wear a mask and, you know, hand washing is just key. You know, a lot of people don't hand wash, you know, just wash your hands after you're done meeting people.
Yeah. Shannon,
and
wash your
mask,
hands when you're done playing with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Before and after.
People are so back to handshaking again. It was kind of the silver lining of COVID for me was we were bowing, the fist bumps, the nods, and now
everyone
wants to mesh hands.
I love bowing. That's great.
Yeah.
We're back to people not knowing if they should go in and then a meshing dicks.
Yeah,
I don't want to mesh dicks.
The answer is don't go in. It's such an answer. Fucking don't go in. Boom. There you go. That's all you got to do.
Or an elbow like your late 80s baseball player.
Or do one of these. This is how close I got to, what's his name? Chris Hemsworth from Thor. You know, Thor, we did this together. Give him one of these. That's fine.
There you go.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, dude.
Yeah, no problem with that.
Yeah, or like this. How's it?
That's a little, I don't know, Black Power-y, I feel. I don't know.
Oh, is that too Black Power? Sorry.
Baby, I'd rather be Black Power than White Power right now.
Oh,
let's be honest,
there you go.
Everybody. So
there
I think
go.
It's the right move, Papa. Right. I think we're okay, dogs. I think
so
we're okay.
First,
with
and also, by the way, Jay, my other co-host, says this all the time, and I can give you credit because you and I are the same age, I believe, although I've been fucking up already twice. I'm 51, soon to be 52. I think you are about
50.
All right, close, right? Yeah. And about the same age. I'm 51.
About the same. That's right.
Yeah, basically, at this point, we're on the wrong side of 50, both of us. And the only thing we always say, which you have both of these, if you're going to be the lead singer of a band, your only job is to stay thin, right? But if you could stay thin and still sound good, that's unbelievable. And for you, you got both still. And because people don't realize you were already a little older when Buck Cherry hit. You know, you weren't like an 18-year-old kid. You were older. You actually said in an interview once that you thought you were going to die by 30 anyway.
I did. Yeah, I was on that path. You know, it's weird, man. I got sober at 23, and I got almost 27 years of sobriety, you know. So before Buck Cherry happened, I mean, I was 26 when I started my professional music career as far as getting paid for music, you know, and mm-hmm. I thought it was over for me, you know, at that point. And it was just beginning, you know, and thank God. And And it's been just a weird journey, you know. I'm so grateful. You know, we've managed to weather a lot of these, you know. Buck Cherry's never been a part of mainstream rock music since we started. So it's been a very strange path, you know.
Right. Well, I would say Sorry, which I think is your biggest hit, but again, I could be wrong about everything, but Sorry was your biggest hit. People always think it's a Crazy Bitch, but I think Sorry was the bigger charter. That you would hear like in the malls. That became pretty fucking mainstream, that song, right? Yeah. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I heard it in a grocery store one time when I was getting groceries, and I was like, this is amazing, you know, to myself. And but actually, Crazy Bitch has sold more singles than Sorry, but yeah, Sorry's up there for sure.
Well, I've been wrong 3 or 4 times already, Shannon, in case you're wondering. All right.
Yeah, you went to the wrong college, right, Ralph.
It's all right.
am I right about this? I believe if I'm right about this one, that I can't believe.
What did you major in?
Communications. Believe it or not. But I'm fucking up, man. What I can't believe, and again, maybe this is not true, but again, we just established we're roughly the same age. You're a grandfather.
I am a grandfather, yeah. My oldest daughter I just had a baby girl.
Congrats.
Her name's Clementine, and she's adorable, and I'm a grandpa. It's weird.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. I have three kids. I got three kids. She's my oldest.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay, that's pretty cool. You know, later on in the show, we're going to, you know, we do the first, about the first sexual experience, first drug. Not many people that are coming onto the show have a hit about their first drug experience, which is pretty weird. Obviously, Lit Up is well documented as your first cocaine experience. That's what you wrote there about, right? So that, I mean, we'll get into it later, but that's pretty wild that, I mean, I don't think that's, how many people can say that that's their, like, we had Phil from Def Leppard on, right? The guitarist from Def Leppard.
And such a nice guy.
Super nice. But what he had documented, he's in the photo of the first concert he ever went to. So in the back of the album, you can see 14-year-old Phil. So he has documented proof that he went to the first, I forgot who the band was. Was
Deep
it Rainbow?
Purple. Deep Made Purple. In Japan.
Yeah,
Deep Purple. That is amazing.
Yeah, so he has that documented, and you have this documented. So we just need to find someone who taped their first time fucking, and we have all three covered, which would be really cool.
We still got several months left in this year, Ralph. I'll tell you that.
You know, I didn't think much of it when we wrote Lit Up. We wrote it in like 20 minutes. I mean, I just ripped that out, and that was it. And we were opening with Lit Up before we got signed. We didn't think much that it was going to be a single or anything because of, you know, the cocaine. And
right.
And I got to tell you, there's a funny story about that. Before we dropped that song, our record label was like, can you say I love the Coltrane? I love the Coltrane. And I was like, no, I'm not going to say that. And can you maybe say, I love the Propane. I love the Propane. And I was like,
and he goes, let me ask you this question. How do you feel about Kurt Cobain? Could you maybe say, I love the Cobain?
Right, I love the Cobain. They should have said that. I mean, it was getting ridiculous at this point. And then finally, our A&R guy did all this research on Eric Clapton's cocaine on a radio and how many times it got played. And it was like played ridiculous amount of times. And they're like, we're going with it. Let's go.
No. I love the Coltrane. You should have been like, yo, man.
I love the Coltrane.
Know, we're Charlie Parker people.
That was really talked about a few times, and I'm like, man, I can't do it. The whole song is not about, it's about, you know, my first experience. I would have to rewrite the whole song, and I'm not even, you know, I couldn't own it, you know.
It'd be so cool. Like, so you go with Propane, and look, it was about my first time barbecuing. It was really wild.
Yeah, and then there was another like really well-known producer that heard Crazy Bitch at the demo phase. Said, oh, it's a good song, but it'll never get on the radio. And I was like, okay, you're going to have to change the lyrics. Like, I'm not changing the lyrics. And just like, we didn't even think it was going to be on the radio. We just wanted it to be like a party fun, core Buck Cherry fan track for like live shows, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what's funny about that, just to go back to, so Adam, it was one of the earlier, when Crew reunited, you guys had signed to 11-7 at that point for that third record, at least that's what was coming through. I forget what label, but that was going to come through 11-7 Music, I believe. And at the Crew,
distributed through Atlantic, but on 11-7, because nobody would sign that record in the United States.
Which
so
is crazy.
Our our manager, Alan Kovac, started a label just to put out that record.
Right. And so Alan, I became friendly with, and because I was at the Motley reunion in L.A., and I knew a couple of the guys at the label, and they gave me a CDR of that one also. So I got the CDR of 15. He goes, check this out.
Look at you and your CDR. You were
back
like
in the
CDR
cool days.
Magnet.
And I was one of the first idiots that edited Crazy Bitch to play on my old radio show, The Tour Bus.
Let's go.
I loved it. I think if I had to pick an album, Black Butterfly might be my favorite, but 15, just a phenomenal record as well. But boy, did that album knock the shit out of everybody. 15 was so huge. But I want to take back 1 second to Time Bomb, because that was a weird moment in your guys' career where first album was so huge, second album you got dropped from the label, and that's or I don't know if that's right or no again, but
no,
at least
we didn't get dropped. We put out Time Bomb. There was some stuff at the label, some power struggles, and they didn't promote the record. It's a great record.
Great
Time
record.
Bomb. And yeah, and so we went out and toured as much as we could on it, you know, and then came back and we were still signed and three of the band members had left. And that was when we just started writing demos and stuff. And actually during that time, that's when we wrote Crazy Bitch.
Oh, wow.
Just well, me,
let me ask you,
just
this
me,
is, sorry.
Me and I, Keith. Me and Keith were in our little lockout room and we were just writing demos to Drum Machine, and he'd lay the bass and guitar down, and we just made a bunch of songs at that time. Crazy Bitch is one of them. It just sat around for like 3 years.
Wow. I just want to know if this part is true, because I heard this, but I've been wrong so many times already that maybe I'm wrong on this also. One of my favorite covers you guys did back in the day was a little-known band from the East Coast, Dramarama. Then they did a great song called Anything, and you guys put that out. And then I heard that was part of the reason why your relationship with the label went astray, because that was put on a movie soundtrack or something, and you guys wanted you to put it on the album and you didn't want to. Is that right or wrong?
That is right. That's absolutely right. It wasn't that we were having a power struggle. We just said this. I mean, at the time, you know, looking back, I would have made a different decision, but like, you know, we had made a rough demo of that song and it was on a movie soundtrack. We thought nothing of it. We just get, and it sounded like shit. And they loved that version of it. They would not let us get rid of this version of this shitty demo. And we're like, okay, whatever. And we're just concentrating on Time Bomb moving forward. And then there was like this, we want to, right when they greenlit our record and we're about to go out, they want to switch gears and go with, you know, anything. And I just said, hey, you know, we don't want to base our career on cover songs. You know, if you're not happy with our record, that's fine. You know, we'll continue to write more songs until you're happy with it. And they're like, and then they said, no, we're fine with it. We're good with it. Let's just move forward. And really, they weren't fine with it. And that was it.
That's crazy. That's pretty wild. You know, it's funny. When the third record hit, I was at the Sturgis rally at Buffalo Chip. You guys were playing, Buffalo Chip. I don't know what year. That every year.
Many times.
Yeah. So let's say it was around 2006 or 7. And it's crazy to think that a band writes their encore song, at least for the time, on their third record. Because every, you know, you move, Crazy Bitch would be the encore song. And that never happens, really. Everyone wants the first record. So that's a crazy,
right.
I don't know when that's ever happened before. And it became, for me, I was a strip club DJ for 10 years. It was like girls would fight in the club on who owned the song for the club. It was a fucking crazy time for that song.
It was fucking nuts. I got to tell you, I never saw it coming. We never saw it coming. And it was, we just rode that wave and that roller coaster. And it was quite a silly few years.
James?
That song was everywhere when I moved to New York. Spring of 06, you couldn't move 2 feet without hearing that song. St. Mark's Place on a Friday night, punks were blasting it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was nuts. I can't even tell you how many times I would wake up and there would be like some voicemail from like 2 a.m. Dude, we're in fucking, you know, Orlando, the strip club, listen to this shit. You could hear a Crazy Bitch and just like, and just be like, fuck.
How many girls hit you up over your life saying you wrote that about me, right? Is that a constant?
Oh, my God. Yes.
So many, you know. I just, what are you going to do?
That's great. And then, which I was surprised, in 2020, there was like a rap remix of it that came out with some dude. I don't
forget. Yeah, we did it with that's something I wanted to do the whole time. You know, that I listened to a lot of hip hop, you know, and I always wanted to do a collaboration with a hip hop artist. And we had tried to do that for years and could not get it over the finish line. And finally, we found our guy and he was gracious and did it and killed it. It's amazing.
That was fun. It was definitely,
you know,
fun.
But I don't know if our core audience really enjoyed it as much as I did.
But I'm sure it opened because, you know, which Papa Roach, which I've talked about before, is brilliant at the term, I believe, is gaming the playlists, where you do a remix or a different vibe on a song and it gets added to a rap playlist. And then everyone's like, well, who's the original? And then it feeds back to you. And that, you know,
absolutely.
And I'm sure that had to happen, that it turned on people that had never even heard of you to go say, oh, let me go track this down.
Yeah, I'm sure that's how we got to 4 million this year on that song. So
that's crazy. You know, that's really awesome.
Yeah, it's nice.
All right, before we go any further, our longest running sponsor on the show, that is Blue Chew. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in a chewable form at a fraction of the cost. We're talking about the Blue Chew tablets that help men achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of erectile dysfunction. It is an online prescription service, so no doctor's visits, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. It shows up direct to your door in a discreet package, and because it's chewable, you know that means it happens all that much faster. Blue Chew's chewables are a godsend for most of us here at the Gas Digital Network. Go to BlueChew.com, use the code SDR, and you pay just the $5 shipping. There is no other cost involved. Just go to BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, use the code SDR, and you get your first order free. You just pay that $5 shipping. We thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast forever, and I really hope you experience the same joy that we do when we do the Blue Chew chewables on the SDR show. All right, let's get back into it. All right, so now the new album, which is, we said, the ninth album, is Hellbound. We'll get into that in a minute, but then I saw that you're releasing or about to release a two-volume acoustic sessions. What, that was recorded during the pandemic?
No, those are already released. That was before we even started writing for Hellbound.
All right, hold on,
I got to get my little puppy.
Okay, cute.
Is he pooped and peed on? Okay.
Are you asking about James or the dog?
Oh, this is
oh my God.
Lion.
I have a word. Look at this one.
Boy, this is my baby.
How cute.
Yeah, how old? He's like 5 months now.
Aw.
Yo, can we guess his name? Yo, is it Coltrane? Yo, you should have named it Coltrane and then sent a pic to the record
exec. He's got Bowie. He's got a blue eye and a brown eye.
Oh, he does?
Oh, wow, that's cool. That's nice.
Yeah, we really love him.
Yo, he's a dog who fell to earth.
Hellbound is, as you said, is... Hellbound is the ninth record. The first single was So Hot, which a really hot blonde was in the video, and it's about how she blows up on Instagram. And then in the second single is the title track, Hellbound, right? And it feels, which you guys definitely have always, there's parts of your element to this as well. What I always felt separated Buck Cherry was that there is like a funky kind of soulful vibe to your rock and roll, similar to AC/DC. And then
absolutely.
The Hellbound to me not only felt like a nod to a real AC/DC vibe, but you're even having like the Buck Cherry style AC/DC logo in the video to almost pay homage to them. Am I right or am I again wrong?
You're totally right. AC/DC is the baddest hard rock band that ever lived. They're amazing. True. They're still putting out great records. They're timeless. You know what I mean? I can't say enough, you know. Simplicity is an art form and they mastered it. You know, what they do is really hard to do and they make it seem really easy. And it's just love them. Since I was a kid, of course, you know, and so.
And you guys toured with them at one point, right?
Toured with them and it was like rock and roll fantasy come true. Like, you know, you meet your heroes sometime and it's just, it's a drag. You're like, oh, I wish I didn't meet them, you know? Because for
I'm
whatever
feeling it right now, to be honest.
There you go. It happens. But you know, we met. We did five shows with them on the Time Bomb tour, and And at the end, you know, first of all, they let us use full PA, which headliners never do for the openers. They always squash your sound so that they sound bigger when they come on. They were like, do whatever you want. All their crew guys were very cool to us and like helped us out whenever we needed help. And they loved us as well, you know, and then we're like, we really want to meet the guys. And so after the last show, they had us up in their dressing room. Angus's wife was like making us hot tea. And I was sitting next to Angus, and Malcolm's over here, and Brian Johnson's walking around telling jokes, and everybody was there, you know, and we're just sitting there like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And they're like, so nice. And I was just chatting with Angus, you know, and, you know, Malcolm's sober at that point. So we were talking sobriety stuff as well. And Angus, you know, the cool thing about Angus is he never partied his whole career. It wasn't his thing. Wow. It was only Malcolm. So like, you know, I was like, wow, that's really cool. So like having a conversation with him, he was just lovely. And he just answered all of our questions. And we're like, are you cool with us like taking pictures? They're like, yes. Are you cool with us like taking a video? And they're like, it's fine. You know, it was amazing, you know. And
that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. Some I'll never forget.
Did you stay in touch with any of them, or that was a one-off experience?
No, I mean, I wasn't going to be like, can I have your number? Or, you know, anything. I was just like happy. They were cool to us and was hoping, you know, we'll do this again sometime, you know, and it hasn't happened because everybody and their mothers wants to open up for AC/DC, of course, you know, but hopefully we'll get that shot again sometime.
Absolutely. And so now with going back to this album, the part I liked is I heard that, you know, it happens once in a while where maybe it's because of the lockdown, maybe whatever, but there was a synergy there where you guys wrote like 6 songs in 5 days and the vibe was just like just happening. And you just like even so much so that I think one of the tracks on the record, your demo audio is what was put on the record. Like it just like the vibe was there. It was right at the right time. Is that a fair assessment?
I mean, kind of, you know, like Stevie and I wrote 21 songs prior to getting in a room with Marty Fredrickson. He produced the record. We've co-written songs with him. You know, we co-wrote Sorry together back in the day. And Marty's a lovely guy, so talented. And our label said, hey, why don't we fly you guys to Nashville and, you know, do a week with Marty? And we're like, fuck yeah. Like, so we flew to Nashville and literally we got a hotel a half mile from the studio. And it was like guerrilla songwriting. It was amazing. We wrote, and in those 5 days, we wrote 6 songs in 5 days. And I would literally get up, I go record vocals for 2 hours. And those were all keeper vocals for the record after I finished them.
Wow.
I would go record for 2 hours and then I would come back to the hotel and Stevie would go in with Marty and they would write a new composition for me, musical. They would send me a musical composition by like 5 or 6 PM. I would write all night, lyrics and melodies, come back the next day, record in the morning. And that's how it was for 5 days straight, no breaks. And it was amazing, you know, and we wrote So Hot, Hellbound, Wasting No More Time, No More Lies, Breaking Down the Barricade. Those were all part of that session. And like, we couldn't write a bad song. I'm like, fucking, this is amazing. And I go, Marty, I go, next record, I want to do this in 2 weeks. And he's like, what? And I go, I want to write the whole record in 2 weeks and never take a break. And he's like, we can't do that. I go, come on. He's like, we got to take a break. And I go, I don't want to take a break because this is where it's at, you know? But it was a lot of fun.
I think sure. Sometimes that's the magic when you don't overthink it. You just got to record it and get it out. And that if the vibe is right, just fucking do it. Some albums get overproduced, overproduction, overthought, and it loses that energy.
Yeah, I agree. And this is a live band and we are, you know, we like to capture that when we're recording, you know, we want all that energy on the records. And I think you get that on a Buck Cherry record. So, you know, anyways, it just made the record so much better than it already was. And then we finish up the other tracks. We did all the, you know, the backups and harmonies and stuff. And that was it. And the other guys came in and then re-recorded live drums and bass. And, you know,
that's great. And then the cover is done by someone that used to be in your solo band that became a tattoo artist, right?
Yeah. His name's Mark Ledig. He played bass in the Josh Todd band. I would always, when we were hanging out, he'd just be doodling. And I'd be like, wow, man, like, you're like amazing at art. Like, what are you doing? Like, you got to do something with this. He's so incredible. And I go, why don't you just do tattoos? And he goes, you know, I apprenticed a little bit. And I go, you got to get back to that, you know. And after that whole thing fizzled out, I kept in touch with him. And he's like, hey, man, I'm apprenticing. And I'm like, that's what you need to be doing. This is your gift, you know. And he lives in Salt Lake City. And all of a sudden, he became a tattoo shop owner, Zen Tattoo. Wow. in Salt Lake. Got all these guys underneath him, and he's doing amazing stuff. You can search him up on IG, you know. And then, yeah, when this came about, I was like, hey, man, we need like an iconic image for this title. And I just thought you'd be the guy, and put it to him. And he came back with that bird with the horns coming off the top. And I was like, this is dope. And we sent it to our manager and our record label, and everybody across the board loved it. And that was it.
And also, what I thought was cool, you did like limited edition vinyl in different colors, and it all sold out.
Yeah,
right?
I got one here. I got a hot pink one. I'll show you.
That's up right up Shannon's alley.
Hello.
Hey-o.
This is great. Yo, I like him petting the dog. This is the coolest interview ever.
It's a cute doggy.
He's a good dog.
Yeah, I love... My wife and I, we love animals. And she, when I met her, she had three boxers, and we love those dogs. And then they eventually, there
That's
we go.
Cool. That's really
unbelievable.
Hot pink. Yeah.
Yo, I might go to Salt Lake City to get him to get me something right on my throat. Right on my throat.
You gotta go. Search him up, Mark.
Do you have any tattoos from him on you?
Zen tattoo. I do, but it's on my leg. But let's see if I can.
Dude's unbelievable.
That's a big, big art piece right there.
This big dog head on my leg.
Wow.
But yeah, it's
he's really good.
Do more. Yeah, he's badass.
Yo, I haven't been to Salt Lake City since I got arrested at age 20 for drinking underage at a Neil Young concert. So if I go back for this is a big deal, bro.
Wow.
You got to do it.
At 20, they arrested you? That's fucked up.
I got arrested for underage drinking at the Horde Fest, seeing Neil Young and Primus, and these sons of bitches almost threw me in jail.
That's fucked up.
Nice.
That's not
right. I mean, that's how I got into AA when I was 23. I got arrested drunk driving.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah, nab it.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, a couple other quick questions, then we're going to wrap up here. One that I find fascinating, because you did have, I don't know if you still are pursuing any acting, but you did have a brief acting career, right? And the way it started was just by somehow meeting Val Kilmer at a Buck Cherry show. Is that right?
That's exactly how it started. And it was just this weird moment in time where it was like these few years where after that, I got another thing and another thing. I never even had an agent. It was all my relationships. Yeah, we were in New Zealand. All right. And we're setting up to do the show. And our tour manager goes, hey, Val Kilmer is here and he wants to be on the guest list. And I was like, what? I go, put him on the guest list. Like, why
is he
here?
Tell Batman to go fuck himself.
He guess he was shooting a movie or something. And so anyways, he was dating a young female and she was into Buck Cherry.
All right.
So I think he wanted to impress her. And so they came to the Buck Cherry show and got backstage. And we were just hanging out, and he was like super nice, and we were just chatting, and then we started talking about motorcycles. I had a motorcycle at the time, and he's like, we should ride. And I go, okay. You know, and I gave him my phone number, thought nothing of it. Like, this guy's never calling me. And then months went by, and I was just happened to be in LA. I'm always on the road. I happen to be home, and he calls me. And he's like, hey, man, I'm in town. You want to come over to the Chateau Marmont and have a drink? And I was like, I didn't want to say, well, I don't drink, but I'll come over there. You know, I just said, yeah, I'll be there. And I went over there and, you know, ordered like, I don't know, like a Red Bull or something. And we started talking. And And he was just telling me how he was doing this movie called The Salton Sea, and it's about meth, and he wanted to talk to me about drug addiction and stuff. So I was like, wow, this is weird. And so we just started talking, and I go, well, listen, I love to read. Why don't you send me the script? You know, like, I'd love to read the script. And sent me the script. And then, long story short, they asked me to be in the movie. And I was like, what do you want me to, I go, stop. I go, what do you want me to, write a song for the movie? Or, and they're like, no, we want you to be in the movie. If you want to be in the movie, I go, yeah, I'll do my best. My father acted. He was in a couple things before he passed away. And, so his passion was acting. He also sang and played guitar. And so I knew a little bit about acting, you know, and, I was just like, what, I just went in there and auditioned. So my first acting audition, no acting lessons. I walk in and it's Val Kilmer and DJ Caruso. DJ Caruso was his first direction at the time. I'm looking at these two guys and they're looking at me like, hi. And I go, hi. And they're like, what did you, which they just said, pick any character you want and come down and audition.
That's so, so I was fucking
like,
weird.
Oh, fuck. So I picked something that was like super hard. It was like, I don't know if you've seen the movie, but at one point there was this guy and he was all tweaked out and he had this, what did they call it? The guns that you shoot like underwater fish with,
like a harpoons.
Yeah. Like a harpoon. And he's there and he's threatening this girl that he's going to shoot her and he's all tweaked out and she's scared out of her mind. And so it's just this scene, one scene. And I just liked it. I was like, I'm going to do this one. And so I did it. I was probably horrible. I don't know. And I didn't hear from them for like weeks. Right. And I'm like, I didn't get it, you know? Oh, well. And then all of a sudden DJ calls me up and he goes, hey man, listen, we already had somebody casted for that role. You did a great job, but we want to give you a bigger role and you're going to play this character, Big Bill. And you're going to be with Danny Trejo in a lot of the scenes. And I'm like, Danny Trejo, really? It was, you know, he's a huge character actor. Yeah. And like at the time, you know, now he does a lot of lead stuff and fucking amazing guy. And he's sober. And I didn't know he was sober. Yeah. I'm a sober guy. So like when we were hanging out, it was like, it was just really a lot of great camaraderie outside of just doing the job, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Vincent D'Onofrio was in it. I had a few scenes with him and I'm just like, what is going on? This is amazing, you know?
That's great.
Yeah, and then after that, you know, DJ had me back in Eagle Eye. I did a scene with Billy Bob Thornton. He had me back on The Shield.
I remember also, was it The New Guy? You were in The New Guy also, weren't you?
I was in The New Guy, yeah. That wasn't DJ, but I did. MC Gainey was a really great actor I did a scene with. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing actor.
That's really cool.
I got real lucky. I did like an indie film. I did a TV series called Push Nevada where I had a reoccurring role that it got canceled. But that was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And then you mentioned your father, which is a crazy story as well. I don't want to go too deep into it, but he committed suicide when you were only 10. But you have a picture of him playing guitar for the troops. And John Wayne. That's fucking
John Wayne.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And he did a movie called Tribes where he had a co-starring role with Jan Michael Vincent. And he did that movie at one point. And it's just sad. You know, it's sad that that's where it wound up for him. But he was a talented guy.
That's pretty wild. Lastly, before we do the first, I read it online somewhere that you said one of your favorite underrated albums, and I could not agree with you more, is the first Love Hate record, Blackout in the Red Room. I fucking Amazing. Love that record, and I actually know Jizzy for years, and I'm sure he'd be
Jizzy is an amazing singer.
Amazing. It doesn't get the credit he deserves because he really is a phenomenal lead
singer.
He
does not.
Yeah.
It's a shame. He's an incredible singer and frontman. And you know, I started seeing Love Hate at the No Boza Jams and the Whiskey when I was like 17. Mm-hmm. My sister was my older sister took me there because her boyfriend was a singer of Lunatic Fringe at the time, and they played with them a lot. And that's how I got to. I was just this little grommet, and they just embraced me, and everybody was cool to me, and I was just a student of the game at that point. I was, you know, they taught me a lot about live performance. You know,
I used to run a rock club in Brooklyn and in Staten Island, a couple of different rock clubs, and Love Hate ruled Staten Island. Like when they played Staten Island, it was like a national holiday back then. It was crazy.
Yeah, they were a credible band.
Yeah, and speaking of bands of that ilk, your newest guitarist is Billy Rowe from Jet Boy, which was part of that whole ilk. Is that the right way to put it? Is that a good word?
Yep. Billy Rowe, he's such a nice guy. What a nice man. And we're like getting along really well. And he just embraced us, and he's doing a great job.
I remember the song Feel the Shake very, very well. It was a big song for me back in the day.
All right, there you go.
Shannon, let's hit the first.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
All right, the name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, the SDR show. We ask every guest since the dawn of time their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and by that we mean the first concert you went to on your own volition. It doesn't have to be a rock show, just the first one you went to on your own. Or that meaning that you wanted to go, not like you're someone dragged you to, like you're 8 years old and your older sister took you, somewhere you wanted to go to on your own.
Fender's Ballroom, Long Beach, California, the Ramones.
Oh. You know why this is very important? James, explain why it's very important to you.
Well, I don't want to cause no problems, but yo, this got brought up in an episode we recorded yesterday. We had a guest a while back who's in the punk scene, and he talked kind of disparagingly about the Ramones, and Ralph could tell that my body language changed in the middle.
Yeah.
And he brought this up to another guest yesterday randomly, because I do love the Ramones, and I think they're like religion, and they're the best, and this warms my soul. So thank you.
It was Fat Mike from NoFX. Fat Mike from NoFX shit on the Ramones,
and it broke
James's heart.
Right here. Just tore thing apart.
That's effed up. Ramones are amazing. They're amazing. I was wearing slip-on Vans. I lost my shoe in the slam pit, and my foot was getting pulverized, right? Oh. And I'm like, I thought I was going to die. I'm like, I got to get the fuck out of here So I got out of the slam pit, and there used to be these big gang fights at Fender's back then between the skinheads and like the regular punk rock kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just happen in a moment, right? So anyways, I got no shoe. I finally get out of the pit. I'm sitting against a wall. I'm like, fuck, thank God, you know, and the Ramones are still playing. This big fucking skinhead starts walking towards me, and I'm like, fuck, man, this guy's going to kick my ass. And he comes over, and he doesn't say anything to me, and he sits down next to me, right? And he takes out a joint, starts smoking it, and hands it to me. And I was like,
that's great.
All right.
There you know, I thought you were going to say he handed me my shoe.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wasn't a skinhead. I was just a punk, you know, surfer, skater, punk rock kid. When we got to bond, and it wasn't about violence or anything, it was like, cause I got beat up by some skinheads one time really bad. And, you know, so it was cool to just smoke a joint and relax, cool. You know?
That's awesome. So now the first drug story, obviously, unless there's the one that's documented is the song Lit Up. But I read that was your first time doing coke was off a Ouija board as well. Is that right?
It was an apartment, like, okay, there was a guy who remained nameless from my high school that dealt a blow to the high school. And he was living in an apartment very conveniently right next to the high school. And he had this party, right? And we all were over there. And I had never done coke at that time. But, you know, I was doing everything else. And I was just fucked up, just being Curious George. And I walking around the place, and I was like, the door was open a crack, and I saw that there's some people in there. I went in, and everybody was sitting around this Ouija board doing something. And I was like, what's up? What are we doing here? What are we getting into? And they're like, sit down, Josh. And then somebody just handed me like a rolled up dollar bill, and there was a line, and I saw somebody else doing it, and I just did a line, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, like I'm, because I was pretty drunk when I walked in there. When I walked out of there, I was back in the game, you know? So it was a good combination for me. But you know, the thing with coke was I didn't have money. So, you know, it was like you had to have a lot of money to keep a coke habit going. So I would just do coke when everybody had it. And, you know, my thing was just I delivered pizzas, and, you know, I just smoked a lot of weed and drank a lot of beer, you know, and I would do coke if you had it, but I didn't, I couldn't like go out and buy a fucking eight ball, you know.
I don't mean this to be probably a sensitive topic, but was there an epiphany to your sobriety? Was there a moment? Do you remember, or was it a transition over time? Was it your daughter's birth? Was there some, you know, specific moment that you could look at as that was the day that I decided no more?
There was a lot of moments of clarity, I have to tell you, you know. One of them right before I got sober and before my daughter was born, I got alcohol poisoning where my hands were paralyzed like this while I was driving. I was on a 3-day run of crystal meth and a lot of alcohol, and my hands got paralyzed. I didn't know it was alcohol poisoning. I was saturated. You wouldn't even recognize me. I'm a bad alcoholic. When I was drinking, I was passing out at one point, like 2 times a day. Jeez. I'd pass out like around 3 p.m., get up, start drinking again. And it was just bad. So anyways, when my hands were paralyzed, it really freaked me out. I just started drinking water intuitively. And finally my hands came back, and I didn't know what it was. Only till later when I was in AA and I was talking about it, somebody was like, oh, that's alcohol poisoning. That happened to me, you know? And so we started talking about it. And then it was shortly after that, my daughter was born, and I didn't want her to see me loaded, you know, because I had been through that, you know, and as a kid, and a lot of dysfunction in my childhood, you know? And so, but I still didn't know what to do. I didn't know people lived sober, you know? And so I feel like I was crying out and to something, some spiritual realm. And all of a sudden, I got arrested, which is really, it seemed like it was a drag, but it was like such a blessing in disguise, you know? And that's what started me on my journey.
That's great. That's good news. All right. Yeah. So now we will do the last one. The first time you had sex.
First time I had sex, I was 13. It was not because of me. It was because of the female that, she really initiated all of it. I'll tell you, I lived in Orange County. She lived in Manhattan Beach. I used to go to Manhattan Beach and surf with my sister's boyfriend, who was an amazing surfer, and I would go there. This particular girl was an amazing surfer in the NSSA, this surfing association. She was like amazing. Like, and so we would hang out at this place called Spider Surfboards, and she'd always come in there, and I just thought she was so hot, you know, and she could surf. And I was just like, you know, I would follow her around like a little puppy dog. And we were the same age, and we just got along, you know. And all of a sudden, I'm just chilling on a school night at my house, and she goes, hey, it's my friend's birthday, and she got a limo, and we want to come up and see you. And I was like, okay, but it's a school night. And she goes, yeah. And I go, okay, fuck it. Yeah, just come up. And I go, so I got my friend Graham. I had a friend named Graham, and I go, is it cool if, you know, he hangs out? So, you know, we have somebody for your friend. And she's like, yeah, get Graham. And so it happened for the both of us. So,
that's so great. You hooked up your friend?
My mom was sleeping. We were in my room. It was super dark. And for some reason I got the floor and he got the bed. So he's on the bed with her, her friend, and I'm on the floor, and it happened so fast, because, you know, I'm 13. It was just like over in a second. And, but it was awesome. Right. And then
did she know that it was, did she know that she was taking her virginity, or she didn't know?
That's a good question. I don't know if I said it or I don't know what I said, but I mean,
it was probably obvious afterwards, but I'm saying beforehand, I was wondering if she knew.
Yeah, I was really fired up. And then later we like were walking around the neighborhood, and we went down to this like little hill, and then she gave me oral that night. That was the first time I got oral. So I got head that night, and I had sex, and I was like, man, I'm, and then I didn't have sex. I didn't get laid for like a year after that. Wow. You know?
If you were Jewish, I would have said that's a hell of a bar mitzvah. You were 13. That's really, you really became a man. And then we always bring this up when we have rock stars on, because Gilby Clark coined the term. He called it rock star sex, meaning the first time you had sex because you were you. Did you hear that?
Because I was me.
Yeah, like people, like, you know, that was very obvious that this was happening because you are Josh Todd.
Yeah, that happened way before Buck Cherry. I mean, my first band was in, I was 15. I played at a house party. That's what Hellbound's about, the song. It's about the first show I did at a house party in Orange County, California. I was too young to play clubs. So we would pool our money together. We'd get somebody's older brother or sister to buy a keg of beer. We charged $3 at the door. We would make sure everybody came through the backyard, right? And we'd set up in somebody's living room or backyard, and we would play until the cops came, you know, and and you know, we would charge, we would make money too, because we would, people would get beer, and yeah, so a lot of shenanigans after shows there, because, you know, I'm in a band. It was the only band in my school, you know, so that would be the first time for sure.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like it. All right, so we're going to wrap now. First of all, dude, thank you so much. You're fucking awesome, dude. The new album is called Hellbound. It's at Buck Cherry everywhere, and at Josh Todd Official is your in your Instagram. That's fine. It's a doggy. You can get away with it. As we said, there's full tour dates online everywhere you can see, and hopefully they'll all happen. Is there anything else you want to plug before we go around the room?
I mean, you said it, you know, go out and check out our videos for So Hot and Hellbound. We're dropping a new video this month for a song called Wasting No More Time. It's really great. And yeah, just get out to the rock show. And if you haven't gotten the record, go get it.
And by the way, the ballad on there that I really gravitated towards, because I like my ballads, is yes. The Way is a phenomenal song, because it starts out with the piano. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's a very hard ending, to the point where I thought I missed something. I went back and listened again. But great song. Really cool. And also, I just wanted to say, I feel like from Black Butterfly, Rescue Me is a very underrated song. It is just such a fucking great song that it should have been a huge hit. I will throw that song on every once in a while just to psych myself. It's just fucking great song. I want to say that. All right, let's go around the room. James, your plugs.
All right, man. V. James Mattern on Instagram. Check that out. Listen to my podcast about comedy and the love of comedy and the journey. Commissioner of Comedy. Also, look for my new album and my special coming out called The Check Spot, where I do stand up while people pay their bills and are drunk and they ask me questions. It's a real...
I want to see that.
Josh, you might appreciate this. It's kind of the metallic KO of comedy. It's the Stooges live. That's what I went for. It's just raw, wild shit. So that's what it is. And bro, you're dope, man. It was a pleasure talking to you, man. This was awesome.
I want to tell you, I was heavily influenced by dirty comedy when I was a kid. Sam Kinison and George Carlin were like, they were my heroes, and Richard Pryor, and me and my cousin used to sneak down to the basement and watch all those tapes over and over again. And I just thought they were brilliant and amazing. And the Buck Cherry as a whole, we love stand-up comedy. So, you know,
I'll say we're doing a comedy festival in Houston in November that I think you guys would love. I'll DM you on Instagram.
We should join forces.
Because we're looking for, we are looking for a band to play, and it would go over so well. I'll tell you about it. Off air, we'll get into
it. Just talk to Larry Mazur about it.
I'll set it up. Shannon, your plugs.
Follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Shannon Lee 6982, and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
And we do this every time. Do we guess? Don't answer this question, Josh. We guess if you do or don't believe in ghosts. I know my answer. My answer is yes, James.
Never been more sure of my life, and I had the Bucks winning this NBA Finals. So, I'm more sure about this.
Josh, do you believe in ghosts?
I definitely believe that there's a spiritual realm that some people are more connected to than others. You know, where it's spirits that haven't gone into the afterlife, and they're in this like purgatory. Because my son, when he was very young, could see that. You know, it was very strange, and we had to work through that when he was younger. And I actually read a book on real life exorcisms that happen all over the world, and it's super crazy.
That's wild.
Yeah,
that's cool. All right, so by the way, last story, and then we'll go. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton, of course, and my other podcast about health and wellness, Good Sugar, comes out every Monday. But this is just a crazy side story. I don't know if you know this, but as I said, I sort of know you guys since 1999, right? And how I knew you guys was my ex-girlfriend, her name is Dawn, was friends with your first bass player, right? JB, right?
JB.
She and I were talking today, unrelated. We're still friends, unrelated. And she said, you want to hear a crazy story? Yeah. I don't know if you know this. JB is being arrested for a years-long printer ink scam, and he's going to jail for a long time. Are you aware of that or no?
I don't know what happened with that, but I did hear about that.
It's crazy.
That's That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But I was like, well, I said, it's so weird you're telling me this. She called me to tell me. I said, I'm interviewing Josh in like an hour. And that's so crazy. But anyway, dude, you've always been one of the coolest fucking guys on the planet. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll play the title track, Hellbound. We add a song every show, every week. We'll add it to our playlist. And, dude, thank you so much, man. And I'm going to email Larry because I'd love to get you guys on that bill. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, let's do it. You guys are awesome. It was a great, great interview. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, dude.
Good seeing you. Be safe out there in the big bad world.
Listening to the SDR Show.
All right, you made it to the end of the show. Congratulations to you guys. I know we've been sharing clips of some of the other shows on the network. There's 21 other great shows all across Gas Digital. And this week, we feature, I will call him not only a brilliant man, but an online provocateur. It is Michael Malice. The show is called You're Welcome. Really fun episode. He got some huge guest lately. It's crazy how much people talk about this show. It's a great show. Here it is, a clip right now, directly from the Gas Digital Network. Subscribe now. Use the code SDR at GasDigitalNetwork.com and get access to every episode. But here it is right now, a clip from You're Welcome. You're welcome.
Pearl Harbor. Did FDR know?
Yes, that's declassified. They broke the purple and blue code.
What are the purple and blue code?
It was the Imperial Japanese Naval Codes. And so the British had already broken it. They gave it to the U.S. This is all declassified. And they knew the attack was coming about 2 months before the decision had been made by the emperor to go ahead and attack the United States because we'd cut off their oil and were encircling them and fighting them through Chinese proxies at the Yalu River and all the rest of it. And so they then made the decision. We knew about a week before even the date of the attack, 8 days before, they knew the exact date of the attack and when.
Why do you think that that is not something that is popularly discussed?
What's incredible is in the mainline histories, the Japanese arrived about 10 hours early with midget submarines and actually attacked. And they had to, like, neutralize the subs, grab them, and the admirals were ordered to keep that quiet so no one knew the attack was coming. So the Japanese even, you know, that was old radio days. So you can't blame them. You know, the attack didn't go as planned. They actually had to, like, shut up the fact that they sunk two midget subs that arrived early. So, yeah, it was disgusting prior knowledge to sucker the Japanese into a war. And it doesn't mean I'm on the Japanese side. It's just, it's a fact that we knew Pearl Harbor was coming.
You are welcome.